John 1, right, in the beginning of the long hour-and-a-half visit with Brock Pomerantz on Friday at supper, the 22nd of February, 74. Channel 1, right, and the beginning of visit, the long visit at supper with Brock Pomerantz on Friday, the 22nd of February, 74.
NBC has one or two programs I want, and sometimes they got they put on sports instead, and there's not any more NBC stations that I know.
Isn't WRUF an NBC affiliate?
Yeah, that's what I mean, besides that.
Yeah, I thought they were the only one. Except, there must be one in Jacksonville, but I don't get the Jacksonville stations too good here. I get the FM ones in Jacksonville pretty good, generally.
Yeah.
Better not get the AM ones. Not very long enough. Just here and there, sort of spotty.
Well, let me tell you, while you were here, the disc jockey has as much to do as anybody else. So it's a busy job.
Definitely, especially when you work alone like I did. You know, I work on a one-man operation usually, and so you have a lot to do. You do the whole show. It's your show, all right, when you're on the air.
Well, do you do the commercials?
No. Mm-mm. Generally, commercials are on tape, unless it's, generally. It just depends on the commercial. Usually, though, the sponsor will have put it on tape, or he will have had it taped by an advertising agency a lot of times, or we will do it ourselves. Our station does it and puts it on tape for him like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's generally always done by somebody else.
Now, do you have them all stuck together ahead of time?
No. Mm-mm. We have a program log that tells, thank you, that tells you what to do, and the commercials are generally on. Are generally on tape, and you have the thing. It tells you what to do. Programming log tells you what to do, and you pick out the tapes out of the rack, and you play them along wherever you want to. Usually, it tells you about what time period to put it on. Then you mark it down because the FCC requires that you have an accurate log of everything that went out over the air, excluding music. You don't have to mark music.
Oh, really?
You know, I don't have to log specific songs. You just say you're playing music.
Mm-hmm.
But usually, like, I was in charge of picking my own music, too, pretty much, within a certain parameter. They gave you an idea of what you should be playing in a specific time.
Or, in a way, they give you an idea of what not to play.
Right. Right, in our station, it was... There was only a certain amount of music in the studio, and most everything in the studio was playable. But
yeah,
it just depended on the time slot. If it was late night, you wouldn't want to play. Especially at our easy listening station, you toned the music down a lot. You wouldn't play our real heavy albums, which weren't really, they were all instrumentals, but they were, like, instead of being, say, piano or organ, they would be, they might be a full brass orchestra or something like that, you know, and that would be a little too much for late night.
Yeah. You know, Faye, it would be interesting just to hang around.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, course, you couldn't go up there because they didn't want you hanging around up there. But hanging around fellows like Brock, you see, they've done this.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd find out what goes on. And you.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, then
you
a little bit more
make a little more sense to you.
Uh-huh.
Well, when I first got into it, I didn't know that much about it when I first got in. Now I know a lot more, obviously. You learn as you go along in the business.
Well, do you think that is... I notice your timing is pretty fast. Do you think... Is that natural, or did you pick that up somehow?
You have to do it that way. You've got to be... A disc jockey gets fired for not working fast enough because, you know, it's... If you don't work fast enough, you get behind. And when you start getting behind... In a disc jockey field, everything, you know, what you do goes out over the air and you can never get it back. You know, I mean, once it goes out, it's gone.
Yeah.
So you have to be ahead of everything and make sure you're doing things right.
Mm-hmm.
I once thought, you know, I always thought it'd be nice if you could retrieve some of the things that happen, errors that you make, you know, if you could retrieve them. But once they go out, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yes, not cow was spilt milk, as they say.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And not make anything of it. You know, I think one of the worst things you can do is start correcting your errors.
Well, you don't.
Mistakes.
You just... Most disc jockeys learn just to... If you make a mistake, just not say anything. Because a lot of people won't realize it's a mistake
they
unless you say it.
Unless you tell them.
Because they don't know it's a mistake to leave about 2 seconds a dead air is a bad mistake on a station like I work for.
What?
About 2 seconds of dead air is a terrible mistake.
You can't have any dead air.
Well, it depends on the station. For WBJW, no, because it was a top 40 type station. You got a top 40 sound, so any dead air was considered a mistake. Pretty bad mistake.
2 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 2 seconds, but see, that would be that much time, and in that time, the people would tune off, you know, decide they don't like your station. You'd lose your listeners. Because we'd go off the air for a minute and a half at a time, because of transmitter problems, and we could lose a lot of our listening audience that evening. This wouldn't ever tune back. I'd tune to another station in town and not tune back to us.
You mean that quick?
Some people are that, you know, they're wanting to listen to music, and if the music isn't there, they turn away. You know? And we also, you just learn to be fast because you have to be ahead, and you have to be exact and precise because the networks are precise, and they don't wait for you. Like, everybody comes in on the network at the same time. And if we don't come in, then we just lose the news. There's nothing you can do about it. When you do that many times, you're in trouble, too, because the news comes in at exactly, on the half hour. Exactly, right? And I warn you 5 seconds in advance, the half hour. But you've got to be ready to have your music be dying out on... You know, 5 seconds still, so you can play an ID and let the news come in underneath. And that I learned quickly. It's hard to do.
In 5 seconds.
You got to back time all your music up a half an hour almost. Make sure you come out right in the end. But it's interesting. Like on WLOQ, I didn't have to do that because we were easy listening. And I could move my IDs around. I had a two minute variant either side of the half hour and either side of the hour. And nobody cared, but at BJ we had a real precise schedule that we had to follow. And our news had to be exactly 15. Well, we had a minute variance. Our weather. We had a minute variance on the weather. Either way. So we could go 14 after or 16 after or 15. About. But no more than that.
In other words, you could play on the weather.
Yeah.
You could just see what you wanted to on the weather.
Right. The weather wasn't precise because you were doing weather local, but news comes from New York or Los Angeles, depending on where they're originating at that night.
And you play it when it comes in.
Right. If you miss it,
you don't record it or anything.
We never record news unless. The only time we'd possibly record it is if it was something very, very important, and we'd get a feeder on that would tell us that it would be important before we got it. All through the hour, they give you news tips all on the line if you listen. And there are also six other networks on that line, so you know, all through the hour there's different news services coming over, and you just know that we take the one at the half hour, and we don't take any of the other ones because we haven't bought them, and we're not allowed to take them. You can listen to them, but we're not allowed to take them on the air. And we would pay for American Entertainment Radio Network. But it was American FM, American Contemporary, American Black Radio Network. That was three other ones. And then there was there were beepers that they'd put in all along, different news stories like you hear on TV on those interviews with people and stuff. And you could pick those up and use them in your local newscast. They'd send those they'd tell you at 5 past that they were going to do them, and then they'd give them to you all through the hour.
You see, how ignorant people are.
If
you're not in the field, you wouldn't know. That's the thing, you know.
Well, some of those things that you thought ought to know. You can't say just what it is that you ought to know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all the stations they can cancel the usual program and put on a baseball game.
Well, they could. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it wouldn't be the usual program. Well, yeah, the music, whatever they're doing. You have to buy the game, you know, from the network, but or at least the game, whatever you do, rent it, I guess, in the network. But you can you know, preempt your regular programming. We did that a lot. And we'd put stuff in our regular programming, like we'd have different shows we'd run in off the lines, different things like that. When we also put in stuff like from WRU Radio Center at University of Florida, we put in Question Mark and a couple of the shows that they put out. We put those in to make up our public service time, because we're required by law to have a certain amount of public service junk. So we'd pick up Question Mark and University Concert Hall.
What is Question Mark?
It's a series of documentaries where they interview. Well, it's just interviews. They interview people on the campus about, like, they interview the professors about the different stuff that's going on campus. And it's produced by Radio Center and the College Journalism Community.
Well, did you ever hear
it? I used to hear it when I run it.
Yeah.
We ran it at 5:55 every morning.
Yeah. Every morning?
Mm-hmm. We ran it then because we knew nobody was listening. You know, because we had to run a certain amount of public affairs time. And
you're required to.
Well, you're required to run a certain amount of public affairs time, and we used that to fill in. And we also had University Concert Hall at 4 or 5 in the morning, I forget which.
I'll have a little.
That was the usual thing. We did that on WLQ. Now, WBJW, we didn't. Well, we were running a church service for a while in our public affairs programming, but we were getting paid for it, too.
Yeah.
They were buying a certain amount of time on Sunday evening, but it got canceled because Sunday evening is not a good time to have a church service on the radio, we found out. Our listeners, the only listeners that liked it were the people from that particular church. The rest of the listeners said they don't like it.
Sunday morning's the only time, isn't it?
Right. Correct, my service.
How do you know who's listening to you?
Well, you don't really know. The only way to find out, we had the different survey rating services that would contact the area and do what, like a Harris poll or something like that, the same kind of thing, and find out who was listening and what were the top-ranked stations. And using that, those figures, we were able to sell our advertising by saying we had an estimated listening audience of, say, 19,000 between a certain number of hours and so on. It also broke it down into what age group our audience was. And that's the way you figured out approximately how many people you were reaching. You never knew at any one time while you're on the air how many people you're reaching, but you could guesstimate by looking at the surveys that you might have. One shift, you might have 19,000, 20,000 people listening. Another, you might have a couple thousand. Well, you never can tell. It's one of those fields where you're talking to. You don't know who you're talking to. You're just talking to them. People. Except when they call in on the telephone. And you had some idea. If somebody was listening, you could always figure out at least one person was listening. If you'd ask for requests and they'd call in, then you knew at least one person was listening. And I worked late night shift. We used to do that. we'd have them call in on the request line. Then we knew you had it boosted your morale if you knew at least one person thought you were was listening to. Like sometimes you'd begin to wonder, you know, if somebody was really listening.
Yeah.
When it worked middle of the night because we were 24 hours a day.
Let me tell you, nothing is as deadly to me as nighttime radio. They're sleepy and I'm sleepy.
You better believe they're sleepy.
And their mind won't work. They start to say something new and the words hardly come.
I know a lot of times, I used to work for a while between midnight and 6.
Yeah, that's fine.
And it is treacherous. It's you don't think it's so bad when you're working it. When you first start working, it's terrible. You get used to it eventually, but I'd work midnight to 6, and at about, I'd be working live mic at about 3 in the morning, and you just start, you know, you start falling asleep, and you know you can't fall asleep, because if you fall asleep, that's even worse. You get fired for falling asleep, because then the record just goes to the end.
Yeah.
If the record, it goes into the dead groove in the back and just sits there. After the tape, it just sits there, and, you know, we're just sitting there on the air. You know, we've had people do that, but eventually a listener will call in and wake you up. But, you know, you just start to fall asleep, and you'd be pumping more cups of coffee into you, keep you awake, and try to sound lively. And then your 6 a.m. guy would have to be really lively, because he's your morning man.
Yeah.
I don't know how he does it. I've never worked 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. and be lively, but anyway. Theoretically, you're supposed to be lively at that time in the morning.
Yeah. You ought to be a farm boy, I suppose.
I don't know. I'm great at staying up at night, but mornings are not my best thing.
No. Well, that's it. I don't know. I think probably everybody ought to do a little spin at that. Excuse me. That radio stuff and just get conditioned to it.
Have an idea of what it's like.
I'm telling you, you can't just take your time and pick your teeth. You got to go ahead and move, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Right. They train you that they work you by the hour, and they want you to work.
Yeah.
Except that you really don't work that. It's not that hard to work, but. You know, you've got to be on top of the situation at all times.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
You can't be behind. You know, if you ever get behind, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's also regulated by the federal government quite a bit, so you got to be very careful that you're following all the government regulations.
Yeah.
And because since I used to run the transmitter too, you know, it wasn't just that I didn't just run the board and the records and the news and answer the phone. See, like when you're a disc jockey. From like 6 p.m. until the next morning at 9 a.m., which is most of the day, you're also the phone answerer. You also answer the door. You also, you know, listen for network. You're on the air. You're checking the transmitter. You're looking at the tower lights. You know.
Have a light cream, Dad? I'm going to give Brock these ice cream.
Give him some ice cream.
Yeah. I'll give you a piece.
But you just learn to be everything. And like the FCC is very strict on the transmitter. You gotta be careful about it too. The worst thing.
It goes like this.
Got to answer the door and answer the telephone.
Well, yeah. By the time you get through all that, you're worn out one night.
I talked to Bob Leach over there one time, and he seemed a little bit short with me. He was just trying to get back to his business, wasn't he?
Yeah, no, I'm not particular. I don't know. He's okay. I don't know. I don't think he manages WRUF very well, but I guess he's okay at it.
Is he's
He's operations director, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The only thing... I think's wrong. He just doesn't. WRUF came out number 0, you know, the bottom of the survey this time. And they are a commercial station, which means they have to sell advertising time. And it's unfortunate when your salesmen try to go out and sell advertising time and you're the lowest rated station in Gainesville. I don't know how they ever sell advertising time, except that it's associated with the university. But
You mean it's the lowest rated?
That's what I understood. It was the last survey. Because WGGG is number one. And it was the lowest rated, I believe.
You mean in town or in an area?
In Alachua County.
Oh.
Well, that's the only stations in Alachua County are in Gainesville, I think. But I don't know. It was pretty low. And so they went and changed their format some. They play rock music, what they think is rock music. Thank you. Between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. But still, what they need to do is appeal to the students on campus, because with 25,000 students, that is a big enough population to support the two radio stations, you know.
You mean the students don't listen to WRU?
Students don't listen to it at all. Well, they listen. A few listen now. None used to listen before.
They listen to WGGG?
I listen to WGGG all the time because I like the music they play better than WRUF. And I got fed up with the disc jockeys at WRUF, which is too unprofessional for that type of station. And I don't know why, because they just make mistakes, and I can't stand listening to mistakes, because I know that, like, I tried not to make mistakes, but, and I'd probably make the same ones, but they just make them too much.
Such as,
I can't read news copy.
No.
And they can't. They can't pronounce people's names, and some of those names, like Kissinger, is a very famous name. I mean, you know, Kissinger's name is everywhere lately. And I've heard them mispronounce Kissinger, and it's not a hard name to pronounce.
See, they had I'm not taking that on women, but they had a girl on there reading the weather.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know, I've heard her. If she's on in the morning, I've heard her. It's unfortunate. There's one.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, what I didn't get. They'd mess up the news, and then they'd mess up the weather, and then they'd mess up introducing the songs. Or they'd turn the song on, you know, and it would sort of start in the middle of the groove or something. At night, they would do almost as bad at night. And they say they play music by request, which I guess they do, but I sure wouldn't request the music they play. I don't know who requests it, but anyway. It's interesting. They have I think what they need is they don't give preference to broadcast majors in that radio station either. You know, like I'm a broadcast major and I go in there and apply for a job, I have exactly the same chances of getting in as a history major or anybody else. And they solely base their employment on your voice quality. Previous experience doesn't even count. I mean, I don't know, it's sort of freaky. That's what they said, and I don't know if they don't choose very well, if you ask me, but...
Well, this girl who did the weather had a nice voice.
Well, some of them, they usually generally have a good voice, but they can't talk. Well, it's too bad.
That's a great idea. That's
She couldn't talk, she couldn't read.
Mm.
No, she couldn't.
And the strangest part, I thought maybe it was just me cutting down the station, but I've heard so many people in Gainesville, I've gone around and asked, you know, what do you think of the news and the disc jockeys on WRUF? And they say, God, terrible. You know, I don't listen anymore because of it. And that, it's too bad, because those stations could be really good. I have a potential.
Well, let me tell you, WGGG has a manner that's more the hillbilly. I don't know what the terms would be, but it's more of a hillbilly type of attitude that they have on that station.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not anybody on the campus, you see, who has that attitude.
Mm-hmm. Well, that might be you thinking the WDVH?
No.
No WGGG? I don't know. They do sort of have an Alachua County attitude.
Well, whatever it is.
If you listen to WGGG and then you listen to stations like in Orlando, the WLOF, it's a rocker in Orlando, same kind of station. There's a big difference.
Yeah.
There's a difference in the music they play.
Yeah.
Because Alachua County always gets the music later. Like Orlando is sort of a trendsetter. Miami and Orlando and Jacksonville are trendsetters for the state of Florida as far as music goes, the rock music, the current music. And WGGG will pick them up after those stations have all gotten. Because I've gone home, like on weekends, And I come back up here, and it takes like 2 weeks for the for GGG to pick up the same music that LOF is playing in Orlando. And the same with BJ. BJ picks up on new music fairly fast in Orlando because they are a conglomerate station. And they get their surveys from all the other stations and in their conglomerate. So they know about what's going on all over the United States. Whereas WGGG depends totally on Billboard and Billboard magazine. It has its pros and cons.
Do you remember that that fool recording that they had about the being on release and then going out and getting a Cadillac? I can't tell you what it was. I used to live over there at one of those service stations, and that was on WGGG. I guess maybe all the stations played it. But WGG played it, and they put their heart into it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, over there in that service station, they were just listening to that and chuckle.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something that carried them through the day. If that's all they'd heard, you see, that would do it. They just had the right to handle it. Isn't it possible just to take the same thing and handle it different?
Mm-hmm. I know.
You don't play a recording and never say anything about it, do you?
Hardly ever. It depends on the recording.
Well, more than likely, you will have a few words to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, that'll sort of give it a touch, I'd say. Well, now, you see, I'm talking past my understanding, my knowledge.
That's usually the way. I think what makes WGGG appeal to, at least me, is I like the type of music they play, because I happen to be a fan of Top 40 style music, not Top 40, but current music. And I don't like WGVL at all, and that's that what they call progressive music, and I call trash, because I can't stand it. But a lot of students do like this progressive rock, I guess they call it. They play album cuts, and I just don't care for it. A few times I can listen to it, but usually I listen to WGGG, because I like the current music. And I also like their style. They're generally pretty good about. They are a Top 40 station. They talk all through the song sometimes, but besides that, they're pretty conservative. As far as they don't have screaming disc jockeys, they don't have any of those, which some of the rocker stations do.
Oh, really?
Like WAPE in Jacksonville has a lot of screamers, and GGG can't afford screamers, so they've got just regulars. Because GGG is just a small town station, really.
You can't have screamers.
No. I couldn't be one, but I used to be just a regular middle of the road disc jockey, sort of just normal talking. I use my same normal voice. You know, some jocks don't. It just depends.
Oh, I see.
Because I can't fake my voice; it's too complicated.
Does Bob Leach use his regular voice?
I think so. I think everybody on RUF does.
Well, he's sort of pompous.
Mm-hmm. The only people that change their voices are, well, the screamer disc jockeys usually make them sound more high-pitched and more excited sounding. And that's one of the things I didn't do, because our station was supposed to appeal to the, what did they say, our age category was supposed to, it's supposed to be the middle age group, and not the teenage kids, and it was supposed to appeal to the middle age group, or middle age and above, but not teenagers, so we didn't try to do the screaming stuff or have the big contests all the time.
Yeah.
We did have contests, but not the kind where you try to blow out Bell Telephone's lines by having everybody calling at the same time, things like that, which they did in Orlando. You know, WLOF got so popular that they would have these contests, and everybody, you know, so many people would call in that they would jam the whole exchange on that side of town. Well, they blew it out one time. So Bell Telephone asked them if they would please only allow people to call, like they would specify an exchange, like 644 exchange. You know, well, there are 35 or 40 exchanges in the Orlando area, but that exchange and one other would be the only ones that could call in at that particular time, and that way they'd limit the call.
And blew it out.
They messed up some relays because everybody was calling the same number, a 293 number, and it just doesn't work when everybody calls at the same time. And so Bell Telephone in Orlando asked them not to do that. But I've had problems with that in other stations because the lines are not made to handle that many calls coming to one number. in it.
Let me tell you, Brock, you're going to be knocking off here in a minute, and I want to find out, I want to hear how you and old Wayne, how'd you all ever get together on that arrangement that you got up there? You must have put in right smart time working out.
Well, he suggested it. See, we talked for about an hour, about 2 hours one afternoon. I guess it was about 2 weeks ago. I just went up there, and luckily he was there. And so, and he had some time on his hands then, which he usually doesn't have. So we talked about an hour and a half or so. He wanted to find out about, you know, first he wanted to find out what I wanted to do. And after that, then he got me talking about what I had done before in radio and all this kind of stuff. So he wanted to find out if I would be pretty good with tape recorders, so he could trust me with his equipment.
Yeah, yeah.
And I must have impressed him enough, because they let me have the key to the building even right off. I was surprised at that. But anyway, so we worked it out, and he told me about what they had available, which is what we've got. And we talked about the chances of going to a 15-inch per second machine, and we figured out that they weren't available was the main problem. You know, cost is prohibitive for one thing. Mainly prohibitive problem is you can't get them, because like the Ampex, the 4040, you know, the big one sits up on, well, the big one of the two is, well, he can't get another one of those. He's got one, you know, like the other Ampex, the tall one ordered. The new model of that, it's been back ordered a year and a half from Ampex. Because Ampex just can't supply them as fast as they're being sold. And that new model of that machine sells for $1,200. And the Ampex 4040 sells for $4,800 for that unit there.
Well, now, which one is that?
The 4040 is a table. I mean, the one that rolls around, you know, the really big one.
Yeah,
They'll take 10-inch reels. It's sport.
And it's $4,000.
It's $4,800.
$4,800.
And the one that stands up tall, I didn't believe this. The one that stands up tall is $1,200.
Yeah.
I just didn't believe that, because that is so expensive for that machine. But I don't know. It's a good machine.
Both are Ampex.
Mm-hmm. Both are Ampex. And then the Sony sells for $170 or something. A little Sony like you've got there. That's not very expensive. Comparably, that's why the system's not working out right, because we have a $170 machine and it's feeding into a $4,400 machine and a $1,200 machine. And it's not the prices that's the difference. It's that the original one we're using as the mastering deck is not really good enough. That's what's the matter, I think. And also, when I listened to that tape in there, we made the copy. I think one of the reasons the voices didn't come out right is because I had the volume turned up too loud. You know, because when it plays back on your machine, it's fluctuating in red almost all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I forgot to do? When we're recording at double the speed, it's changing the frequency of the sound. Therefore, it's making the VU register higher than it really is. So I need to lower it back down some when I'm recording, because when it plays back and slows back down, it's going to be louder. That's why I did there. It was looking just fine on the VU meters when I was recording across. When you play it back, it's distorting because it's playing too loud into it. So that's probably one of the reasons why the voice, it's not the voice pitch. Well, it is partially the pitch, and also it's why it sounds kind of slurred. And I could hear it on this machine, and I couldn't hear it on the one over at school. And the reason is probably because, I don't know why, but anyway, that's probably, those are better machines, obviously. But
well, even so, it would be just a slight twist there. There's a difference.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's one of the reasons I think it didn't, you know, record it too loud, which made it distort the voice. And also, that tape's a little different, so.
Yeah, that's not one of the best tapes. I'm sorry. I should have got a good tape to start with, you see. But you just reached in there.
That's probably going to, you know. We were talking about it. Mr. Daniels and I were. Well, he came in. I don't remember when. Whenever I go over, he comes in and talks, because he likes to talk about tape recorders. We talked about tape recorders for a while.
Yeah.
He's a pretty nice guy, really.
Oh, he is a nice guy.
I was really surprised that he took so much interest in me, considering he'd never seen me before. And, you know, he's a really nice guy.
Well, you...
And a very busy guy, too.
You see them fellas he works with, they haven't had near your experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't imagine many of them there. Lewis is pretty good, and...
Yeah, I met Lewis whenever I got the tape for you. I met Lewis.
But I don't imagine there's many of them there. I mean, he'd like to have you on his staff.
That's what he said. He'd like to have me on his staff whenever he can get an OPS account that'll open up, you know. But he doesn't know when that'd be. He's just putting me on the side. He said that if he could find something that I would want to do and he'd want to put me in. He doesn't want to put me somewhere where I wouldn't work, you know, not something he wants to put me. If he was going to put me on the staff, he'd want to put me somewhere where I could really, you know, help him and help myself and enjoy it. So I don't know what he'll do about that. Some year, maybe. It's a good end with that department.
Well, no, I tell you now, you see, either something could come up tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just keep
that's
in
the way
touch,
it works.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you don't have to talk to him, you see. He has an extra good secretary.
That's Sharon? Is it Sharon, the girl that sits in the front?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's her name?
Sharon.
Yes, well,
Sharon.
I don't even know her name.
I think her name's Sharon Page.
I've forgotten. I believe I did know her name. Part, I don't know. Well, you see, she's
very efficient.
Yeah. Hell, if I wouldn't mind having a secretary if I could have somebody like that, but I wouldn't get somebody like that. I'd get somebody that run me crazy.
She's pretty nice. She seems to know what's going on.
Yeah.
She and Betty is the girl that does accounting for them.
Yeah.
Her office is across from Wayne Daniel's office. She's very good, too. And very nice. They're all nice in that department. Anyway, so I talked to him. We got it squared away. Partially. See, one of the things that was hanging us up is that your tapes are recorded on 4-track, but it's standard procedure in Instructional Service is not to use 4-track. Simply because most people don't understand how it works, and they don't do stereo recordings. Most everything they do is voice. For, you know, these tapes, and they do a lot of cassettes. Excuse me. So he doesn't have any 4-track equipment. The only thing he has is that one machine. I was shocked. He says all he has, if we wanted to play a stereo tape, and it's all he's got is that one Sony like that, right behind you there. That's all he's got in the whole department.
Yeah, I know that. Well, he didn't set the policy. That it was set way back before him.
Oh yeah, it's standard policy in a department like that too.
Is it?
Because you see, in that situation they don't need it, and he does have them through his department, but they're in like the music department. They're under him, but they're not in his inventory to give out. There's one in Carlton Auditorium too, which is under his inventory, but it's not in his rotating stock. It goes in Carlton Auditorium. That's where it stays. And same with the music department. The equipment stays in the music department. And so on like that. And he's not in charge of College of Journalism Communications. They have their own inventory control.
Yeah.
But he does have a certain amount of rotating inventory that's in his department. And then he has the Teaching Resources Center, which is something different, which has a bunch of other equipment, like they have it in Little Hall. They have much equipment in Little, and they have a bunch of equipment in Norman Hall and so on like that. That's his under his department, but not under his hand at the particular moment. So. Well, he does. He's in charge of inventory for it, I understand, but other department people do it, too. Excuse me, under him. Mm. But that's the way, you know, it works.
Well, don't he have anybody on the staff there that helps him
out? Yeah. He's got, he does. See, he's an assistant director, right? Dr. Webb is the director of the department.
Yeah.
And she's in charge of the whole thing. And he's in charge.
That's right. I met her.
Yeah, he's in charge of... Now, he's in charge of instructional services, but a different part of instructional services, and she's in charge of the whole thing, including the board of...
Let me tell you something while I think about it. If I don't want to talk when I think about it, I'll forget it.
Okay.
Well, now, you take... They've got a writer's conference coming up here next week.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I mention that, I'm slightly interested in it, and I'm going to some of the meetings. Well... what I have found out, Brock, is that in those meetings, and they talk for half an hour or an hour, I listen to it, and I don't really know what they're saying. If I have a tape of it, I can come home and listen to it, and I can tell what they say.
Right.
Now, I have found the same thing about it works with the television. If I want to get the news straight, I'll play it over again.
Yeah.
If I go to church and hear the sermon, it's a whole lot better if I come home and listen to it again.
Yeah.
Now you see, I don't think many people realize that. When they think about tape, they think about Watergate. I don't know why tape is they're so goddamn suspicious of tape. it's the most helpful thing I have ever heard. Now, where would I get with the talk with Mr. Weaver and those people?
Mm-hmm.
I don't tape much of it, but if I didn't have a little specimen of tape every now and then that I can look at and get it straight. You see, with that, and Even so, to see how their mind works, I have to take that to the typewriter and work it out. Now, you ought to read some of the articles I've written on it. Not that they're any good, but it'll show you. I grapple with the problem, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to what he says.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, you listen to just a little piece of it.
Yeah.
You see, I listen to the whole thing, and then I set it all down, I transcribe it, and I look at it in as many ways as I can, you see, and I come up with remarkable things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really me or my hearing capacity, but it's just mostly my effort that is rewarded. So you see, in this case, I'm not bragging on myself. I'm just saying how much I have to do, but after I do it, I get something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyhow, you see, I got wound up then. That's what they ought to have, that writer's conference. They have 3 talks a day. And it would be no trouble at all just to take an ordinary little old tape recorder up there. Even a cassette would be better than nothing. And put it, and see what they'll do. They'll hold it back here and let the man talk over there. They can't do that. They've got to put the speaker up there, you see, where his voice will fill it. Or else it's painful to listen to it.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you see what you. Well, you see, if I had that, I'd like to go.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't get it straight. I won't get the name straight and all like that. See, because I tell you, these days we all do so much foolish stuff, you see. Now, you don't realize what a mental jumble your brain is in when you go to all them classes every day. Look at that, all mixed up.
Yeah.
Now, how could a man be anything but addled?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I do the same thing. My mind's addled all the time. How can I get anything straight anywhere along the line? Well, I see I'm just overstating it. But there is something to it.
Yeah, I know. Well, I can see that.
And when you make a special effort to go to something and are interested in it and want to get it straight, just a little old piece of tape. But you see, I don't feel free. It's not my show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel free. See, and I'm older than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been here longer. And I don't feel free to go in there and stick a little microphone up there.
Yeah, I know. So many people.
Now, you see, if one thing they could do... One thing they could do, at least to get them started, they could borrow somebody from Daniel's office over there to set the tape up for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they wouldn't have to do anything. Of course, you got to be there and monitor it. You ought to be there and monitor it. But at least that would start them off.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know any of it. See, they haven't wrestled with it.
Yeah. You know, the analogy of that, you know, you were talking about listening to it twice. Almost every time that you hear anything about reading, you cannot get, you know, the first time you get through a book, you don't really understand it. The second time you get through it, you understand it better. The third time, you understand even better. And fourth time, and so on. Until, well, you can saturate yourself after about the fourth reading of a book. But
but
that's just the way hearing a discussion or hearing, like, a sermon is a good example. You could hear a sermon once, all right, you can hear it. You might listen to it. You can get lost, you know.
Get lost.
You get lost,
you
and your mind gets somewhere else, and then you come back and you say, oh, no, I missed part of this. What am I going to do? I can't catch up.
Well, you know what to do. They encourage that. You see, they sing songs and all like that for 30 minutes. And, you know, singing tires me almost as much as laughing.
Uh-huh.
And the time I sing a few songs, you see, I'm sort of wore out. Uh-huh. And then when the sermon comes along, I sort of
Yeah, I'm a little different on that because I'm a singer, but I like to sing. I'm in Glee Club, but anyway, I like to sing, so I'm used to singing. But still, you can get tired out, you can get lost by the time you know they start to sing. Or you know, like in a lecture, a lot of times I go to these lectures at school, and they're just some of them are hazardous. I went to one the other day, and the guy just started off. He started the lecture on the wrong foot. He sent around a synopsis of his lecture to the class to read. Now, when the professor, Dr. Langford, read the synopsis to us, and he didn't even know what they were talking about. It was something about, now, you see, this is what I can't even remember hardly was about, and that's why what a wasted hour that was. But anyway, he talked about the relationships between art and some, you know, and it was about ideas, and it was real deep in philosophy and all this kind of stuff. And he talked, and it went right over everybody's head, and they all fell asleep. And the best lectures that I go to, it's in the humanities lecture series we have to go to, are, I think it's Dr. Graffi, I think his name is, he's from the music, well, he's humanities, but he's into music, and he does lectures on music, and he does the best lectures I've ever heard, and you don't have to listen to him twice, because of the way he does them, but if you listen to him twice, it'd be even better. He also makes them interesting. He's an interesting speaker. But like that one with on the ideas, I bet that guy had a ton of ideas because that's his project. That's his life is worked around this project that he was explaining to us. But he got so far, it's a relation project dealing with philosophy. And it was so far above our heads that he really doesn't help either himself or us. He just talked
around.
And
then you're not exposed. And then next time it's a lecture on something else. So you
never got to listen to it again. And like I don't know, I don't really have time, wouldn't have time probably to listen to it again, but it still would have been interesting to hear what it was about.
Well, if you just skip his lecture and listen to the tape.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't. Because
you can stop
the
tape. Well, sometimes you want to see the person's inflection so people can make it speak, you know. Because they just need inflections. And I don't know. I've seen some really funny inflections in these things. And, like.
Now, do you know the tape's on?
No.
Well, you see, you talk better when the tape's on. I just put it on just for the fun of it. You don't need it, you see.
Yeah.
But you see, it makes me listen better and talk better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't wonder, you see, quite as much.
I wonder. I can sit down. It's so funny. I can sit down like, I get into this couple of people at the house, and we can get in this big, long discussion, and I spent the other evening, we got talking about radio, and if you get me talking about radio, I talk all night about radio, but anyway, because I'm super interested in it, when somebody else says they're interested in it, then that's, you know, and they ask me questions about it, and I can, you know, really talk into it.
Yeah.
And I got talking with a friend of mine at the house about that the other night, and we sat there, and I was going to go study, and I talked an hour and a half about radio, and then I got in a couple of those the other day.
Yeah.
That's really fun, though, because I really, you know, when you get to talk to people like that, you learn a lot about other people that way.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot about, you know, the people in our fraternity.
You tell Wayne what I was telling you about,
mm-hmm.
that some of these people ought to know that, and they won't go to the extra trouble. You see, they don't know how to use tape recorders.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it's not that complicated. That's what I understand. People are so hung up on this Watergate thing because, you know, Nixon bugged his house and he obviously was listening to the tapes, but he was listening to them to mostly what I believe he's listening to them for is because when he talks to somebody in his office, right, he talks to them and he can listen and they can go into a pretty long dialogue, but he wants to know what he said after
he wants
through.
To know what he said.
Yeah, he wants to be able to go back and say, well, what did I tell that guy, you know, after he's through, and he
That's
listens
right.
to him.
That's right.
And, you know, and then they said, well, you know, now the place is bugged, and now everybody thinks that tape recording is scandalous because of the scandal in the Watergate thing, and plus they say, well, I could never run a tape recorder. It's too complicated. When I turn the tape on, you got to put the tape on there, and I don't know how to do this and that. And so many people say that's how Sony's marketing these little cassette jobs that you just push the button and they start taping. They even have the microphone right on the machine. They have marketed a million of those because so many people are scared that they'll break. You know, they don't know how to run the tape, so they can't do this.
Yeah.
So the quality is inferior on those little machines, but you still get some kind of taping. And that's what people are into.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty rough, but at least they get something.
Yeah,
I think. Yes. Now, on that, let me get a little sheet of paper here. On that system that you all worked out.
My feet's too big.
Do you
take, there we go. System here. Now, here's your little Sony.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then you got it over here to the upright.
Yeah, the Impex.
And then that's the left.
It's the right channel, but it don't matter.
Right channel.
Right channel.
And then you got another cord coming over here to the desk model.
Right. That's the left channel.
That's your left channel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you take my reels in there.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have it. Same thing. I call it channel one.
Mm-hmm.
Left channel.
Left channel's channel one. So.
I don't know which it is. Which is which. Left channel. You see, and then then it may go over into two channels, and that'll be the right channel. Say this is one to the end, and this will be 1 to 700. Now that's what you're taking off.
Mm-hmm.
And these two, you see, are the same torque.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I put this on the left channel and it goes to the end, and then I turn the reel over.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't think about that. I'm glad.
Well, let me tell you. That's one of the small things that nobody can think of. I mean, you just
even,
got to...
You know, I never did think about that, but if I record them, I'm going to get pieces of conversation that aren't going to be together. That's
going to
make it even more complicated.
Yeah.
Let me see. What did I do with my pen? I must left in the car. Let's see. Do you have another little piece of paper? I want to see if I can diagram. Well, I'll use this somewhere on here. So, a little blank piece of paper. Because I need to figure that out. I'm glad you reminded me of that. I hadn't even thought about that. Terrible. I know that much about tape recording, and I don't know that. Oops. There we go.
I see. That's what we got to go by.
Mm-hmm.
I just put them down in order. You see. Now here's the 25th of December and the
20th. What's the S stand for?
Friday.
Oh, Friday. Okay, 25th of December 1970.
But now that's. I don't know. That's two of them.
Mm, it's
I
two
mean,
reels, I think.
I got copies. You see, they're copies.
Oh, I see.
I try to take out the copies like this, you see, 66,
mm-hmm.
and it's the same thing as 65.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing in copy. Well, now you see here's the 31st of December 71. That's channel one right. That's the whole channel, and here it is over. That's almost the whole channel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they have to go by. That's right. That'll hold us together.
Mm. Yeah, I see now. Things are making sense. A lot. I see. Yeah. Are these now like this file is one specific person, right? Oh, this is Mr. Weaver.
Right? That's right. It's all Mr.
So this is all the conversations with Mr. Weaver.
That's right.
Oh, I see.
Now on these reels, you see, you've got several. You've got different people on every reel.
Mm-hmm. But Mr. Weaver's on like 117, 105, 107, 107.
No, he's just on. Might say on this this reel 117. He may be just on this part,
mm-hmm.
And the rest of it will be for somebody else.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. Well, this is beginning to fall into place a lot now.
Well, that's the trouble, you see. I worked this out as I went along, and you see, I didn't know what I was getting into.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking the technical. Now I understand how this is working too. And I can see what we need to do.
Now, the reason I didn't use Monoro was it would take two goddamn many tapes, and it wasn't the expense of the tape.
No.
Is that I just didn't have
the
place to put them.
When we make the copies, see the way Daniels decided. Well, I don't know whether he decided or I decided. I don't remember. But anyway, we're talking it over. And since now, when the copies, are you going to keep the copies, or the copies want to be something that you can let that people can just not listen to, right? And you're going to keep the originals, right?
Yes.
And like, are you going to give the copies like to the library?
Yeah.
Well, see, this is what we got into. When you give them to the library, they cannot take them as four channels like you've got them recorded because they can't play them back. Because there's no equipment in the library to do that with. So that's what we see. This is what the big thing we've run into. We have to make them two-channel, Monaro, in order to make them playable in the library, which is unfortunately going to double the length of the tapes. And of course, unless we make longer tapes, but that breaks the conversations. So it's going to double the amount of tape, but still, the library has plenty of room to put it. So.
Well, let me tell you, that's right, except that I won't conform to the library standard on that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I give them this type of tape I've got, they'll have to buy a machine to use it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if we do that, this is the thing. We don't need any of the equipment we set up. Because the library has a four-channel duplicator. Well, it's as many channels as you want. What it does, it's a high-speed duplicator. It'll duplicate the tapes at 15 inches per second. It'll double the duplication. And the reason Mr. Daniels didn't think you wanted to use that is because it will not change your tapes to two-track Monaro, but it will record your tapes exactly as they are onto other reels. So in other words, we can put it on the high-speed duplicator, and it'll run through, and it'll copy your tape exactly as it is on one side, and we flip it over and run it through the other way, and it'll copy and make an exact copy on the other side. It does it 15 inches per second. It's a TIAC, I think, high-speed duplicator. And you could also be making cassettes at the same time. In other words, it takes four cassettes, three or four. It's got a master and three or four slaves for the. High-speed duplicating reel-to-reel. And I think it also may do 8 tracks, I forget. But anyway, what it'll do is it'll transfer exactly what's on your reels to the slave reels. And it'll do it at 15 inches per second. The only thing it won't, he wasn't sure, he didn't think it would have as good a quality as us doing it the 7.5 across the machines we've got. Well, if we use one of your machines here for the master and then the two Ampexes for the slaves. This would make better quality sounding recordings, but it's going to be, it's going to make them two-track Monaro, and it's going to make them...
Well, let me tell you,
It'll probably be about the same.
I don't particularly care. The only thing is, I haven't been much interested in this library. I have to have a certain amount of security on these tapes.
Mm-hmm.
The only people that can use these will be mature scholars,
mm-hmm.
because they are personal,
mm-hmm.
and you just can't turn them loose.
Right.
So you see, it's such a limited use at the present generation now. 50 years from now, it's a different matter. But that's the reason I didn't much care whether they were two-track or four-track.
Mm-hmm.
You see my reason?
Yeah, I can see,
Because what you pay for tapes, you see, that's nothing at all.
So,
I didn't know they had anything over there.
Well, see I didn't understand. He don't understand. So he didn't realize that because he thought you were going to the University of Florida libraries, and since they don't use four track machines, and he thought it's pretty complicated to figure out where the stuff is, the way your tapes, you can figure it out, and I can figure it out, but the normal person who wants to listen to the tape is not going to be able to figure out where in the world all that stuff is. I'm going to turn the machine on and say, I'm supposed to listen to the left channel now, and I'm supposed to switch the side and listen to the left channel and right channel like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he thought, for the sake of the people that were listening, that we should make them into the Monaro version, which would double the length of the tape.
Well, now, let me ask you, Bronx. On that machine, you can disconnect one of those damn channels.
Yeah.
And you still got a Monaro.
Oh, you mean on your machine?
No, I'm talking on that 15-inch library thing.
Oh, you mean on, let me think.
Somewhere
the 4040, the Big Dex model?
Huh?
Oh, yeah, both of the MPEXs, you can just turn off one channel and you have Monaro. Both of the MPEX machines, because they're set up. So your tapes,
oh, is that right?
Let's see here, let me show you what your tapes are like. I think you know, but anyway, I'll show you anyway. Your tapes are recorded like that. There are four tracks in your tape.
Yeah.
And this is I forget which is which, but it don't really matter. This is the right channel. No. I just goofed it already. I know a lot about tape recorders, but I can't even remember how it goes. All right, your tapes are divided into four tracks, the way you've got them recorded.
Yeah.
Like that, as they go down the lateral width, the width this way. And it's half-inch tape, so it's whatever, eighth-inch. These are eighth-inch tracks, approximately. And these two tracks going in this direction, that's one direction record track. So this is right channel, that's left channel. On channel 1, when your tape's going through forward direction, it's going through the backward direction. This is channel 1, and that's channel 2. And it's right, left. When it's going through the other way, so your tapes are recorded this way, and this is channel, they number them this way, 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're going forward, you're recording on, well, actually, when you're going forward, you're going that way. Well, across the lateral width, the tapes are going this way. So it's 1 and 3 when you're going forward, and 2 and 4 going backwards. Or the other way through the machine.
Yeah.
What you've done is you've recorded track 1 going this way, track 2 coming this way, track 3 going this way, and track 4 going this way, which gives you, you know, all that tape. And when you play it back, and you just play back this way, and this way, and this way. But this is the way a normal Monaro tape, you know, is just half track.
Mm-hmm.
And this is right.
You
got
to keep track of.
Right. And if it's stereo, it's right and left. Now, see, these Ampex machines are made to record your right channel on the top and your left channel on the bottom, and you can't switch the reel over, you'll erase it. But what we've done is we've disconnected. They've got two amplifiers in them, left and right amplifier. We just shut the right amplifier off, so it record a left amplifier off, so it records coming this direction, it records this way in Monaro, and it comes back this way in Monaro. And that way, it'll play back on any machine, because it's a stereo machine, you play the right channel going... What's the left channel? You play the left channel going this way, and the left channel coming back, the right channel coming back this way, and you get a Monaro signal out of both of them, and you get hiss on the other channel. Well, actually, you play on the one that's going forward.
Now, let me tell you, you mean the Ampex machines you've got there, you can do that stereo or Monaro?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good Lord. I didn't realize
they're half-track machines, so they use half the length of the tape for left and right channel. When they're in stereo, or they use just half of it. If you play Monaro, you just use half each time. Now, see, if you record half-track stereo, half-track stereo, they call it. This is called half-track. This is quarter-track here, and this is half-track, just like it says.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's full-track, which is another thing up here, and that's just where it records the whole width of the tape, and it only goes through one direction. This can go through one direction only, this can go through one direction only, and this can go through two directions. This can go through two directions if you record in Monaro and one direction if you record in stereo. Because you see it has come through and you just wipe the whole tape. If you're going in stereo, if you're going in Monaro, you just wipe half the tape and then half the tape comes back. So this is what they wanted to use. This is the standard one they use in the library. Because because he can play it on a monaural or a stereo machine, and he can it'll work just fine. Either one, either machine.
So they don't really have a choice.
No, because this, see, this tape is standard. Standard monaural tape can be played on any machine available, including full track, half track, quarter track, anything. They don't make eighth track, but almost virtually anything can. This tape is universal. It'll play on anything you want to play it on. This tape is not universal. Well, it'll play. Your full track tape will play. Well, full track is universal too. Full track will play on any machine, except it won't have very good bandwidth on anything but a full track machine because they use the whole width of the tape to get your high extremely high fidelity on full track tape.
Yeah.
And this is even less, and this is better than that, like, because you get a wider width. This tape here, though, will only play on a quarter track machine, because if you play on a full track monaural machine, if you play your tapes on a monaural machine, you'll get one track going one direction and one track going the other direction. They're both coming out of the same speaker, so all you get is garbage. This is the problem with the four-track tape. But on a stereo machine, now the way you've got it, you can select, like you do, any either channel and listen to it going either direction. And that's why, like, the quarter track is good for stereo. If you're in stereo, you know, you just take... If you record the tape in stereo, you can't play it back on a monaural machine, but still... I just beefed myself up, but anyway, you still can't. That's the trouble with quarter track, and that's the advantage of half track. That's why they use half track in the library, because it's totally universal. Any machine will play it back, as long as you use the standard speed.
Well, what do they have that quarter track?
Well, the quarter track machine...
High-speed machine up there for?
Well, not the MPEX Dex model, the big
one. I'm talking about the one in the library.
The high-speed duplicator that I was talking
about?
Well, it's not really quarter track. It's it has a tape head that runs across, and it's got the things all across the tape head. It's got recording function deals. You know, a tape head has your playback tracks opened up here, where the coil runs up against the tape. It has like eight channels, he said, across the tape head, and it just takes as the tape runs across here, it takes exactly what's on the tape. It transfers it exactly as it's coming off, whichever head it, like if there's four tracks, it hits these four heads right here, and sends that signal over those four heads to an exact duplicate of that tape head, only record head, on the other side, on the slave models. So it returns it exactly as it is here onto the other ones, just through a preamp. So it'll take up to eight track tapes, I think he said, like it does, it will do a standard eight track tape through this machine, and it'll make slave copies, but it'll only make them exactly as the original. So in other words, we can't take this tape here and turn it into this tape here on the high-speed duplicator. It won't do it. There's almost no high-speed duplicator that'll do it. He said
this.
It's from the quarter track that you've got into the half-track job here.
Yes.
Which is the universal one. Yeah. But.
But it will do this just the way it is.
Yeah. It'll make an exact duplicate of this particular tape here, exactly the way it is in quarter track. It'll do it twice the speed.
Now, if we wanted to do this and leave out one of them, couldn't we disconnect something so it wouldn't put this one on too?
You mean on the high speed duplicator?
Uh huh.
No, it just does exactly. It's not very versatile. See, it does exact copies. It's made to do exact copies of something like it.
Yeah.
It does cassette to cassette, or reel to cassette, or reel to reel. And so on like that, but it makes it an exact duplicate of what it's got.
Well, what in the world they get? What use do they have?
See, what they have is like they record half track tapes and then they put them on the machine and it makes another copy exactly like it, or they make
at the library.
Yeah, like or cassettes. They use it mostly for cassettes. He said they hardly ever duplicate reel to reel, because see they've got cassettes in there. You know, he makes the cassettes for instructional services, like you know for film strips, and then they take the master cassette here. And they split up to four slaves out here, and it makes four copies of the cassette to send out. See, but it takes exactly what's on that cassette and puts it on these four here.
It won't make four of these.
Well, it'll make three of these, I think, at once.
Oh, really?
But it makes how many do you say it makes? It makes two or three copies. It doesn't just make one. But it makes them exactly as the original. Now, the high speed duplicator, I was told the first is out of order, but I was told by Wayne Daniels that it's not out of order. But I'm not sure. Well, he said in other words,
well,
he said we could use it, but it's out until, if it's out of order, it's only out until like the first part of March. It's out like till like the 14th
but
of March.
You're not talking about Wayne's high speed duplex.
Yeah, it's his. It's in their department somewhere. I don't know where.
I heard you said the library had one too.
No, it's in the library. It's his department though. It's under his department.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Well, now he's got one up there in room up there in the building he's in.
Yeah, it's on the other side. I think.
Yes.
Isn't it?
But
yeah.
That's his.
Well, yeah, it's his department. This is the one he's talking about.
Well, that's the one he's talking about.
Yeah, it's his department's machine, but it's when I said the library, I meant, see, I think of him as being in the library, because it's all the library to me, but anyway,
I see.
Even though it's in
well,
his...
Well, now, that's the thing I kept thinking we ought to use.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is exactly, see, this is a thing.
And just put these things exactly the way they are.
Well, we can do that.
And just not fuss around with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can go up there and smoke a cigarette.
That's what he said. See, he said that...
Or chew some tobacco or whatever one drink.
That's what he was...
See, this is a way to keep you crazy, keeping books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only thing that... The advantage... The reason he set me up with the equipment he's got me using now is so that we could do this quarter track to half track change. And also double the speed of your duplicating time. And make... tapes that would be extremely versatile. They'd be extremely versatile, but they'd be double the number of tapes,
yeah.
But they'd be extremely versatile. Anybody could use them.
This other business that I just, we were just talking about, see this. I never have been able to make this clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see now, because like this goes, this is the conversation comes along here and it turns around and the same conversation comes back this way.
Yeah.
Through here.
So this way you'd have it on one reel and then go to another.
I know
reel.
What you'd have to do. I see what you mean. Like this would be right and left channel. Now the only way we could avoid that, we couldn't avoid it on that machine. That machine's not versatile enough. See, the way we could do that, another technical feature, is if that machine had accessibility to all four tracks on the head. But unfortunately, it's not a four-track head; it's a two-track head. And turn it over, it wouldn't work. If we could get a machine, the only way we could do it that way would be if we had a machine with four-track head on it and had accessibility to all four tracks, and then we could just pick out the ones we wanted and put them on the tape. Like we could take tracks 1 and 3 by themselves and put them on the same tape, which is what we would basically have to do. The way now I'd have to do it when I duplicated, if I did it this way, would be to duplicate. Bring it through one way, and it would have to be a single thing. See, we're running into too many problems with bringing it down to two tracks, because the only way we could do that, it's almost impossible. Now, I didn't understand that before. That's why I didn't, I thought, well, we could do it right easily. I didn't think of any problem with it. Now I see. There's definitely a problem here. Boxes here. Lee, how do you ever keep these files straight?
Hell, I don't.
When did you start this project? 1969? Was that when
uh-huh.
First tapes?
Interesting.
Well, that sure does make sense.
I didn't have anybody to help me. I had to find out everything myself.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine that must have been something.
And I go up there and want to give them a little information, and they just keep me on the shin. They don't want any of my goddamn information.
Who's this now?
Anybody up there.
Oh.
They don't want it.
But the university likes to be that way.
Yeah.
Oh, they're like that with anything. You got to try to tell a university anything. They try to figure anything out. I've tried that, too. University is a good one for runaround. Definitely.
Now you see, this is on one reel.
Uh-huh.
Here's one fella, and here's another.
Mm-hmm.
And now, if I wanted this, I don't know what in the hell wrong with this. I'm not used to it. You see these things. I had these on there. Yeah, that's right. Now, see, look at here. Here's one, two, that's the same one, and this. Now there's three speakers.
Mm-hmm.
Three speakers on there. Now suppose we wanted this one.
Mm-hmm.
We could run the whole damn thing up. We could take these two. Now take these two. And if we wanted this one, there ought to be something that we could press a button there and not get this one down. And then if we wanted them both, we'd put it on.
Oh, you mean on the high-speed duplicator?
Yeah.
No. Certainly not. It records exactly.
Now, you see on this one, here's one of the beautiful ones. No, it's not. This Eastman. I've got some tapes there that are first rate. I mean, they are performers stuff. This one here, what made me think about it,
mm-hmm.
Nick is that ham radio boy that got me going.
Uh-huh.
If it hadn't been for him, I'd still be walking around with a shoulder strap, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do that anymore. The only place I ever record is in here.
Mm-hmm.
He came up here one day. He hung around here for several years, and he had this egghead-looking fellow with him. He had on a sort of a egg yellow jacket, sweater, T-shirt or thing,
mm-hmm.
with a horse on it,
mm-hmm.
and. His hair sort of, I don't know, and he turned out to be one of the famous Catholic fellas. He had charge of the, oh God, the words don't come to me. The some, he had been dean of some large chapel in Washington D.C. and things like that.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, it was rich. I can't, you just can't imagine what these things have done and how much experience there is on them. Let me just tell you a little bit about that. When I didn't go out there,
mm-hmm.
because I was teed off with Nick for some reason, but I said, Faye, go out there and see what the little bastard wants. I guess so I cussed. And she went out there, and she came back and said, this fellow out here, he's some... And I had some student papers in there, and I had one good piece on religion by a freshman girl. And I told her, I said, take this out there and see if you can make anything of it. And I saw him when he was reading it, he sort of held his head, you know. And when I went out there then, our contact already made on that old freshman girl. He says he had seen all sorts of drippy religious girls like that. There's more sex in it than religion, you know. And so that helped me. I didn't know him. What it was. And I, Mr. Eastman, he's the maintenance man. He's the man who. Oh, he can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
He put that screen door on, and he does everything. he was up here then. He's helping me on the front porch. Those columns out
mm-hmm.
there were getting shaky down there. And he was right out there at that time, and he was filling up a little ditch. And I thought to myself, well, we ought to bring Mr. Eastman in here and sit around. And let this man talk and entertain him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing about the countryside is they can talk, but they can't listen.
Mm-hmm.
So the way it turned out was when we got in here, you see, Mr. Eastman started talking, and he started egging him on. And Mr. Eastman had the best audience he ever had. And he gave one episode after another that happened down here at Orange Lake. Down
mm-hmm.
there where the Trade Winds
yeah.
restaurant is. You see that now what it amounts to is this. He report and make you sick and wonder why you ever open your mouth. Now that's what the countryside can do when you hear a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, You see, ordinarily, they are leisurely. They make contact with the subject, and they're thinking as they go along.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he had already talked to me about all those things, and I sort of half gave him a cues here that now and then, and sometimes he took his own cues, and he went over those things that he told me about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fabulous. Just fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, and you'd see him, and you'd think, that little old puny fella, what's he good for?
Yeah.
Why, God Almighty. You see, he not only knows what goes on, but he can tell you about it and make you seem ashamed of yourself. Now, that's what these tapes do.
Yeah.
And you see, that's what you got up here with these egghead professors and all like that. You know, they think they know something. And they haven't. See, they don't know what's on these tapes. They never heard people talk like that. I never either.
I've never heard anybody talk like that either, really. You know, you sort of hear satires of that. You know, just talking.
Yeah.
You hear satires on TV once
yeah.
in a while. People laugh and you'll
yeah.
say, here's how people
yeah.
talk, you know, and they tell stories and stuff.
Yeah.
But you don't ever.
They have no idea what.
They don't have any idea because.
What they can do.
You'd be surprised. But, you know, I was surprised what people talk about, too. Sometimes, you know, we get into a conversation about really nothing. You know, they're just talking. They have these social conversations where you just talk about nothing, you know, really.
Yeah.
Get nothing out of it, but something like this, you know, where these people are talking,
now
they're relating stuff.
This is the thing that got me started, and this was in the fall, in September of 1968. I had been in touch with all these people, and they were all old, getting old, and they were sick, some of them. And I could sit there and listen to this talk, and all my cares would leave me. I mean, I had a feel for it. And that summer, that late summer, for several weeks, I didn't go around them. I didn't have the heart to. I just felt like this was the end of all this good talk, and I didn't have anything to put it in.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made me sick to think about it. And then, school, new term started, been going 2 or 3 weeks, and I got up my courage one day, and I went around, and I stopped at 3 places. And each place I stopped, it was just remarkable. And all I had was that little old cassette. And I had it, I kept it hid as best I could, you see, so it wasn't disturbing anybody. And I got those talks, I guess it was an hour talk from each one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept looking at it and looking at it and looking at it, and everybody would come out here, I'd play it and listen at it and listen to it and listen to it, and they'd say, oh shit, you're just wasting your time, there's nothing on that. And that's where I made my first statement, that what they say is informative and it comes from their experience. And for me, that opened up the whole thing. From then on, I could listen and hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
the way it goes. That's what it sounds really.
And I remember one of my little freshman boys, I used to talk about a little bit in class, not very much. And oh yes, he says, we went by there. There's a little old store over here, country
mm-hmm.
store. He said, bye. And I said, well, I hope you're enjoying being over there. I said, well, we didn't stop. We just saw a bunch of old fellows out there in front talking about the old times. He knew what they were talking about before without even listening to them, you see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I've always thought about. You know, you could really get into it. Well, that's like they've done commentaries on, you know, on America.
Yeah.
They did commentaries on that. And it's really different, you know, what people can say.
What class do you used to teach? What did you taught freshman English for a while?
Oh, I've taught freshman English and sophomore English and junior English and everywhere along the line.
Did you teach 111? Each
111, 112, 117,
211
and 211,
right
211 and 212, and
213. All right, you've taught everything. I'm in 111 right now. See, this is my third quarter. I'm the third quarter, but I'm not doing too good. I didn't get started in English like I was supposed to. So I'm in each 111 right now, writing
you
papers.
You don't know too much, you'll get flunked.
I don't
know. You know too much now.
You
got to be pretty ignorant in order to pass that.
Yeah, I got an interesting course coming up. I know. You have to know how to write, though. That's just hard. I've got a professor now who says the University of Florida grading system is too easy. He's only going to give B, C, E. Because, and nobody gets B's unless you're super good. Nobody gets A's because he doesn't have any excellent students. Most everybody gets C's, and the people who don't get C's get E's. That's no poor students either. But that's what everybody's getting in the class. But he's nice, but he's real young. He's only second year from graduation. He graduated 2 years ago, and he's still got his young ideas with him. He'll get it. He'll go over it, hopefully. But it's sort of a fun course. I got communications next quarter, special topics English about communication.
Yeah.
Should be interesting. I forget who's teaching it.
Yeah.
Should be a pretty interesting course, I hope. It sounds like it. We get to learn to communicate.
Let me tell you, can you look into that telex, is that it?
Mm-hmm. I think it's telex.
Without, talk to without bothering Daniel?
I won't have to ask him because I have to get permission to use it.
Well, I mean, just to find out about it.
Well, he's told me it'll do. He says it'll do that. And the thing is, like, when I first went in there, the first day, I got the impression it was busted. The last time I went in and talked to him, I got the impression it wasn't busted. So maybe it's fixed. But if it's not fixed, it's getting fixed by the 14th of March.
The last information I had was that it was... the cassette part wouldn't work, but the reel-to-reel will work.
Well, that's probably what, because, see, the secretary thought it was busted, and they said it was going to be fixed by March. No, Betty said it. She thought it was busted, cause it was going to be fixed till March 14th, because the representative that's coming to fix it is coming around that time of the month, and Bob down in the electronics department, I think it's Bob, they can't fix it because it's too big, and it's under warranty or something. So Telex or whoever they bought it from has to come fix it. But I was under the impression that it does reel-to-reel, so... If it does reel to reels, we could do this much faster. You know, we could
15
do
inches.
We could do them four times as fast as they were originally recorded, and
we get
all the tracks at once.
Yeah,
and we'll get exact copies. And
right.
We could also be making, you could be making up to three other copies of the whole library. You know, if you wanted to.
Can you?
You know, because you put the master on, and you've got, I think, three slave decks that will record three copies. Two
good
or three
Lord.
Copies, so you could have more copies.
Yeah, yeah,
now you'd have your whole house filled up with tape when we got done, but you know, you'd have three copies, and that way you'd have two, you know, copies on this tape. That's good tape. It's not going to deteriorate with age. Now the acetate tape you've got is going to deteriorate with age, but this is Mylar that we're using now, and it shouldn't. Nothing should happen to it.
Yeah.
You know, in the process of aging.
Well,
hopefully.
Well, we've made some progress.
Yeah, and. Now, on duplicating, I've got to find out where that machine is. If it's up on the other side of the fourth floor. I think what I'll do... See, he's got me set up in that room where I am, and I've got almost the main of that room now, which is interesting. Because, see, I can put the tapes in there, and I can still use the Ampex that's in there, the big one, because when I take them off high-speed duplication, I'm going to want to listen to at least that part of every tape to make sure it duplicated.
He's got one in there with that big telex. He's got a TIAC in there.
Oh, does he?
Play them on.
Okay.
Yeah,
and I can use, I thought I'd use the room in 453 as storage and also just a place where I'd come in and work.
Let me,
leave the Ampex in there.
Let me tell you. With this sort of work, with this sort of material, it's not going to work just hitting it every an hour or two at a time.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be better just to take off a whole day or 2 days or whatever you're up to and have me around in the background there to sort of keep the paperwork going.
Right. I'll have to try to do something. I'd like to work it's hard for me to get that much time off. That's the only problem, because the school is getting, I got involved in a bunch of campus organizations, and the school is, I take 16 hours, but I'm in class 22 hours a week, and so my schedule is hard to do that with. That's the only hang up that,
you take Saturday or Sunday or something like that.
No, weekends are almost out, because I can't. I can get in an instructional service, but
and you see, if you got a stretch, you can get so much more done. You don't have all the start and stopping.
With the high speed duplicating, we can put one reel on and do three copies, and then sort of just a start and go process anyway. If we know what we're doing, and if we can get the logging worked out. Now the logging should be real easy this way.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah.
See. All I've got
to do
when I make a copy,
put the
take your original, and make the copies and put them back in the boxes and put the real numbers, then you can take this and transfer the names. You've got the names. You can transfer the names and the dates and everything onto the boxes that I've got numbered. So our logging should be real easy that
real
way.
Easy.
And I won't have to worry too much about logging except to make sure that the reels go in the right, I mean, the box is after
we
get through.
Except with this sort of material, you need me within call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to tell what to do.
And to sort of overlook some of the, you know, little items that you don't want to carry them all in your head.
Yeah.
Now, with this kind of material.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see. What if we set up a... I'm trying to think how we could do this. With a high speed duplicating. See, main thing I want to do, if I want to do it, I can't take, there's no way I can take a whole day, because see, I wish I could, but the way my schedule's working, I'm in class every day. And
Saturday and Sunday too?
Well, I'm not in Saturday and Sunday, but see, I'm not always here. And I'm busy on Sundays most of the day, because the whole morning shot with church and the evening shot with church. So the afternoon is all I have, and I study on Sunday afternoons usually.
And Saturday
is okay, except that I can't get into where the high-speed duplicating equipment is on Saturday unless I have to get another key. I could probably get in, I guess, on Saturday.
Yeah, he'll let you have it.
Now, I've got a key to instructional services, but I don't think it doesn't open anything on the other side of fourth floor. So I know where that is. It's in where Lewis was working the other day. Oh, you know, we got another problem with high-speed duplicator. Lewis is using that room during the daytime some of the time, too.
He don't use it on the weekend.
He don't use it on the weekend,
no.
But he uses it sometimes during the week, because he was working in there the other morning when I went over to get the tape from him. So that's going to be another thing that we can't interfere with him, because he uses that machine to duplicate off the instructional services tapes. So that's going to run into another problem. Time is going to be a problem, because I don't have that much. I have some. The main reason, you know, I need to get the time is I've got to get to studying, and I've gotten behind my studying the last couple of weeks, and we're getting near the end of the quarter. It's going to be 3 months in the quarter. Then we get a 2-week vacation and a quarter ahead of us, but that's the only thing is the time.
Well, do you want to hold up on this until... I don't want to hold up on it.
No, I don't want to hold up either, because I need, you know, I need to work too. That's another thing.
Let me tell you.
Help me keep together on finances is another problem with me. That's the reason I have to work. Otherwise, I would work partly because mostly because I enjoy doing stuff. I enjoy, you know, things I enjoy. But still, with my car costing as much as it does, and school costing as much as it does, I have to work some. You know, that's one of the reasons I work. Main reason I work partially because.
Yeah.
You know, school finances or something else these days.
Well, I have to tell you, you turned over your mind, and you know how to catch me.